There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 388, The Incredibles 2.
Yes.
I think, is this one just called Incredibles 2?
It's Incredibles 2. There was like, yeah.
It was interesting because the first one's The Incredibles, yeah. And then I always wanted to keep saying I'm going to see The Incredibles 2.
Well, because somebody said, hey, Brad Bird, why not The Incredibles 2? And he was like, well, because... why not The Terminator 2? And it was like, it's Terminator 2. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, oh, yeah, you're right. It does sound kind of.
And it does sound way better without the. Yeah. It's just weird because you want to say that the sequel's like, called.
Yeah. No.
So. I'm trying to suss out that. I guess it sounds different to me because the Terminator isn't plural.
Right.
It's singular. If it was The Incredible and then Incredible 2.
Disney hashtagged it either way to be safe, but
yeah, because they knew everybody'd get it wrong.
Yeah,
so they're like, just in case.
But no, I mean
it's a valid point.
Yeah. So I guess before we dig in, let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Dan.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Don't forget, we're available on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe, and you can also find us on the internet at facebook.com/realspoilers and our Patreon account if you just can't get enough of us at patreon.com/realspoilers. So there we go. I guess now we shall dig into Incredibles 2. We are the Joe-less. So
no, this is Joe-less 2 actually.
Joe-less 2.
Oh, okay. 2 weeks in a row.
Last week we were the Joe-less. This week we're Joe-less 2.
So let me ask you guys, did you guys both see Incredibles in theaters?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So that came out in 2004. So it's been 14 years. I was going to college. It was my first year of college. So I just, this is the one Pixar movie that because of like where I was in life, I just never saw it. I never came back around and saw it until about within the last year. I just saw The Incredibles. Wow. I thought it was great. I just missed it completely.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you have zero nostalgia for the property.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I really enjoyed it when I just saw it this past year. But I don't have that whole buildup. So all the people saying, like, I've been waiting 14 years. Like, I've been waiting a few months.
Right. Oh, no, this is, I've triple dipped on this movie because I bought the DVD. And then when the Blu-ray came out, now I got the 4K. Just came out.
Ah.
It came out in 4K?
Yep.
Oh, wow. I bet this movie looks incredible. Well, I don't mean to use it 4K. Punny, but no, 4K.
It's one of those ones. It's like, and then my daughter got into it, and she loves it. And it's one of those ones. It's like, I probably watch it at least once or twice a year. Well, with her, it's probably more like Saturday.
Every day. It's in the background.
But my kids are like that with Toy Story.
But I will actually sit down and watch it, and it's just, it's one of those ones. It's so, you know, you got to remember for Pixar, this is the first time that they had an outside story. It was an outside story. It was Brad Bird's story, and he wanted to direct, and he approached them because he wasn't, because of Iron Giant, which is his great cult status, but, you know, it underperformed. And
also not a kid's movie in the traditional sense.
And he was like, hey, I want to do this. And it was the first time Pixar said, Yeah. They let somebody come in with an outside, you know, it wasn't from the brain trust.
Right.
No, he worked with them.
Sure.
You know, he also did him a solid stepping in on Ratatouille. And although some of that, we're starting to hear that some of that sounds a little sketchy, the whole director replacing, they've done that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is the first time that they did that. And it, I think it helps separate this. It's part of Pixar. It is part of Pixar, but it's so interesting to watch it now. It's like this movie, or the first one, came out the same year that I think the second or the first Fantastic Four came out.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, yeah, because I remember people saying that this was a better Fantastic Four
Absolutely
movie
was.
Than the Fantastic Four.
They always say this is the best Fantastic Four movie ever made.
Yeah, and it was so, I mean, and watching it now, it's like, I was telling my wife, I go, that first movie's so timeless because there's no era that it's attached to.
Right.
You've got 60s music, 60s spy music. You've got, you know, so heavily James Bond and stuff. You got a lot of Johnny Quest in there. And then you've got 50s mid-century modern architecture, you know, and then the cars are all like, so there's never anything that
but
looks
like But
they're
still like pretty high tech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at no point where you're like, oh, it's a totally a 1990s
but
movie.
What's also great is that it can't ever be outdated because you've got this slick Pixar animation, which is beautiful and breathtaking, about a 60s era-ish looking movie. And so no matter when you watch it, it's like the setting is supposed to be older, but it looks new, which most movies, if they're set, you know, actually filmed in that period, especially younger kids are going to go, oh, that's old, and they won't watch it. So it has this really interesting combination. Yeah. The other thing that I found fascinating about it is I had always heard it, but it's so just like Iron Giant, not a kid's movie.
Right.
There's so much adult subject matter, and not to say that it's overly violent or tackles anything gratuitous like that, but it's not at all like a kid's movie, but kids can still enjoy it. It's got the action, it's got the fun animation, but it's a deep story.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed by, you know, that it had come out 14 years ago, especially, but how well it held up for adults. And and this movie does more of the same.
Yeah. I think
he wrote it for adults.
Yeah. And I think this one might get a little bit too into grown-up territory. I say grown-up instead of adult so it doesn't sound dirty.
Sure.
But my crowd, anyway, I got a little, the younger ones got a little restless.
Same. That's the problem with movies like this is it's fun for kids to watch them at home. Is fine because they can run around and do whatever they want, play with their toys.
Right.
But to keep a kid's attention span, I just noticed in this
movie. It's a 2-hour movie.
I loved it, but there is a lot of talking.
It's a
2-hour
movie.
Sitting around the couch, talking, talking. And again, I enjoyed it, but if you're thinking about bringing your kids, I mean, I had a wiggle worm next to me, and now we have electronic.
Katie?
No, she had been waiting 14 years for this movie. She was giving death glares to all the kids. Like she was one of those people. It's like no one better ruin my experience, you know, because she's been waiting.
She's like, I will end you.
But no, like this kid now in the theaters, we have motorized chairs that can.
Oh, it's so
up and down, squeaky leather seats
with
the motor going. And like and it was obnoxious. And like the parents should have. Eventually, like they were way late in telling their kid to stop, but like that's the problem you're going to get into, and it's the hard part about this movie because, of course, it's geared towards kids, but you've got all these adults that love it, and then also the you know the younger adults that were kids when this first one came out.
Right.
So I will say that if you haven't seen this yet, you're probably better off going like in a week or two, or to like a I don't know what you at 9 o'clock or something. If you really want to enjoy,
or go to one of the dine-in ones where
that you can't have kids.
Either you can't have kids, or if you can have kids, like most people probably aren't going to shell out
$15-20
to take their kid to it.
And I just mean for the enjoyment. Like if you really want to enjoy this and you love the first one from 14 years ago, like. I mean, I still really enjoyed this movie, but with the kid next to me doing the chair stuff and the noises, talking out loud, it's like, and you can't blame them again. It's
a targeted kids movie,
but you know, you're going to have a different experience. So just keep that in mind going into it. But
I mean, if you're going to go, if you're going to see it today, I'm on a Saturday, which is what I saw, you're going to have families, but it worked out for us.
That's good.
Because, you know, we have an almost 6-year-old.
Yeah. So going into this movie as someone that didn't have the nostalgia for the property, but really enjoyed it. I've seen the first one twice now. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I really liked the sequel.
Good.
They, of course, in 14 years have really stepped up the animation. Mm-hmm. The character models all look the same. They're the same shape. You know, I wondered, Elastigirl still going to be as exaggerated as she was in the first one? And, you know, and it's just, they kept the same design, which is great because people wouldn't want them to change that. But it had a very it's hard to say, like a realistic, like, you know, they put that faux film look to it. Mm-hmm. And so it looks realistic, but at the same time, it's still animated. Like, it's just a beautiful animation. Like, all the shadows and lighting were so much better than they were 14 years ago, but they still made it look like The Incredibles.
Yeah, I think they even, I'm curious to see if they, like, even sort of, like,
stepped it down a little,
held back.
Right.
So there wasn't, like, this huge disparity between the first one and this one, because 14 years is and that technology.
In yearly animation, I mean, Pixar every at least year or two at the longest, but I mean, they're always coming out with a new technology and they look better and better. And so that was one of the first things I thought was, how are they going to still make this look like? And I think they pulled it off great. It looked more realistic, but at the same time, again, cartoony. It's just breathtaking. And you know, this is Brad Bird, who obviously he's notoriously difficult to work with. He is a perfectionist. He spends way more time and money on things than usually would studios will allow.
Right.
And then look at the end product, though. Yeah. I mean, he's made a name for himself. Well, that's the... Do you know the story?
I still cry about that.
Do you know what he turned down to do Tomorrowland?
Oh, it was... It was something big.
One of the Star Wars movies?
The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
He turned down Star Wars The Force Awakens to do Tomorrowland. And you know what caused him to do that? What like the sign to make the decision was? An episode of South Park. It's a fascinating story. I actually tweeted about it a couple of days ago, but when he had to make the decision, so he was working with, I think it was Damon Lindelof from Lost, is the one that produced Tomorrowland or wrote it as well. And Damon, when he heard that Brad Bird got the Star Wars offer, he was worried. He was waiting for the phone call of, I'm going to drop out your project that's been in development, about to start filming.
Right.
Lindelof was like, I know I'm going to get this phone call, right?
Right.
And so he was worried. But then Brad Bird said he turned on the TV and it was an episode of South Park, and they did something to where, like, they put, like, Mickey Mouse in front of Space Mountain with a lightsaber or something. They were making fun of, like, Disney and Star Wars and stuff. And he took that as a sign, like, like, not to, they're making fun of the commercialism and everything. And so South Park made him decide to go with Tomorrowland over Star.
It's not like that's not a commercial film.
Right.
No. It's just, I don't know. It's just funny.
I mean, it's like, I don't know that it's any more, there's any greater amount of artistic integrity to make a movie based on a theme park ride.
Yeah.
You know, not even a theme park ride, a theme park land.
The,
you know,
the, sort of the backstory behind Tomorrowland and the development of it just makes it so much, is such a better version than what we got.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, they found this, like,
they took,
know, sort of an archive from Walt, and it was all these notes and all this stuff. And, you know, so, I mean, they you know, sort of like the build up to it, and
they took Tomorrowland and turned it into Escape from Witch Mountain.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it was there. It's just they weren't really there. Yeah.
I still can't bring myself to watch it. I've never seen Tomorrowland just because of how much you guys said, like, they're in Tomorrowland for like 5 minutes.
Yeah. The first, and then, like, that first, that opening scene in Tomorrowland, you're like, right on. And you're like, oh, but then we're not going to go back and for an hour and a half. And then when we do, it's going to be dilapidated.
Yeah. Okay. Then it was kind of like, I mean, it was that. And then it was Men in Black for about an hour.
Yeah.
It's just,
So The Incredibles 2. Incredibles 2.
So this movie is supposed to take place only months after the first one.
I think the opening scene is like
minutes.
It's like, it's been 14 years for us, but it's been 14 seconds for them, because the last one ends with the Underminer coming up, and they're like, let's go tackle the Underminer, and this picks up with the Underminer.
Yeah,
so, I mean, they butt up against each other.
It's right after, it's right after Dash's race.
Right.
You know, the race where they're like, you know, go faster, slower. No, okay, just go in the middle. Go for second.
Yeah, it's been so long since I've seen the first one.
And, you know, Violet has her date set up now. She's going to see the boy. I can't remember his name. And then they're, you know, walking to the car.
Yeah.
From the first movie.
So, yeah. I mean, it really butts up. But after that scene, it's pretty much, it's been 3 months.
Yeah, so. I think because there's like that's a flashback or something, or it jumps ahead a little bit in time. But yeah, I think it's cool how they did that, how there was such a weight with it, but yet, you know, story-wise, if you watch them back to back, it's just a perfect continuation.
Well, and I like that how they open it with sort of an odd cold open, too.
Yeah. You know, it's really weird. It's so, was that character in the first one, the guy that erases memories?
Yeah, he was their handler.
Okay, so he reminds me of like other Pixar characters.
Yeah,
so just the way that he's made.
He's very.
He looks like gross. Just the old Pixar guy that you see in some of their other stuff. So it was confusing. I'm like, wait a minute, who is that supposed to?
Yeah, and I don't know if he was in other movies, but their character models for this, I was looking at them. I'm wondering, do these jive with other Pixar?
Yeah.
We don't see a lot of human. Well, you see. Brave.
In Toy Story, maybe it was 2. So the guy in the short film that plays Chess, isn't he the guy that restores Woody?
Yes.
And so he has that weird human, you know, he's one of the few humans you see, but they use his character model again in that. So I was kind of wondering, looks.
There's been so many movies where you didn't see humans in Pixar movies, like Big Al.
Yeah. Cars.
From Toy Story 2.
Completely. Yeah. You know, there's no humans in that.
So the characters, I think the characters sort of fit within their...
Yeah.
They're sort of like design.
Yeah, I like it. The thing about Incredibles is that all the character models are very unique and they have a certain style to them. I like it that they're exaggerated, that the proportions are odd, you know, for compared to humans and the real world.
I think they have harder edges on
definitely,
them than like we saw in Brave.
They have really, they have really, you know, they could have a really big torso and it goes down to a tiny little waist.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, it's interesting how they draw them, but I like it. I think it's a great style. And so they definitely continue that from the first one with this one. So the movie starts off and the Incredibles are in a fight and this kid is recounting the story. It's the one who Violet's supposed to be on the date with later on. And the Incredibles break into action and he's hiding, I think, behind a car and he peeks out and he sees the whole family. And of course, he still can't tell who they are or who she is. But as soon as she takes off her mask... then it's Violet, you know, and so he's freaked out by it. And so their handler ends up doing like the Men in Black, you know, mind eraser type tool, except it's like a plunger that sticks to his head and erases his memory. And we find out that not only does he erase memory of the incident, but he erases all memory of Violet, which becomes a running, you know, storyline because she's mad. She's mad at her father for telling the handler and him erasing her. And so all throughout the movie, she's bummed out by this. You know, she was so excited for the date and this kid doesn't even know her and causes some pretty emotional beats too.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, again, this movie gets into some serious territory.
That was the guy from Breaking Bad, right?
Mike Ehrmantraut or whatever.
The handler?
The handler guy, yeah.
That sounds familiar now that you say it.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it. Because I was trying to place the voices.
Yeah.
And I like that guy in the first movie. In the first movie, he was the one who, like, you know, after Bob loses his job at the insurance company.
Yeah.
And he has to step in and basically, like,
Jonathan Banks.
Jonathan Banks is the actor who plays Mike Ehrmantraut in Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Well, and Saul's in this movie too, so I would not be surprised if he got Bob Odenkirk the job based on him being in this franchise. It's like, oh, this guy would be great for, you know, for whatever.
Oh yeah, I mean, like Bob Odenkirk, you do right off the bat.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
In the trailers, you're like, well, there's
as soon
Odenkirk.
As he, yeah. And you're right. He's Rick Decker in Incredibles too. Is actually so good. Yeah, good spotting
Decker.
There. Yep, I like him. But anyway, so Violet's, you know, dealing with that. Meanwhile, they're all staying at a motel because ever since they're kind of in hiding and their handlers got them staying up at this old.
Yeah, it's sort of like a weird witness protection where they have to shuffle them around and establish new identities.
Heroes are still illegal, even though, you know, they saved the day in the first one, but they still have all the laws out there that they're illegal. But they're obviously now the whole family's together and they're all breaking the law, doing the crime fighting together.
Well, and we see, you know, from the last one where they ended on that great beat of like everybody putting on, including Jack-Jack putting on his mask, even though they don't know that he has powers because in the first movie, all the powers are only the audience knows.
Yeah.
But they never saw that because it was all up in the air with Syndrome.
That's what kind of confused me during this one because having not seen it as many times, I'm like, we knew he had powers, right?
We did.
And then I was like, oh, but they're just finding out. Yeah.
Yeah, no idea.
Yeah. Syndrome found it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will
and
say
he's not around to say anything.
No, I will say right now, I think Jack-Jack is the MVP of this movie.
Oh,
I don't know what other character got as many reactions, was as fun. Like, you know, they end up giving Jack-Jack as, you know, we saw him with just a small amount of powers in the first one. Mm-hmm. But in this one, you know, by the end of it, you've seen like 5 or 6 or a dozen different.
17.
Yeah, well, that's what they say, where I'm like trying to count. I'm like, 17.
Right.
He says that, but I'm like, we've seen at least 5 or 6 different powers. And
and they kind of imply, too, that, like, it's not uncommon for babies to manifest different powers until they kind of land on one or two, right? And that's how I
remember. That's what it sounded like. That, yeah, this was not unusual.
Kind of the same
babies.
Way like when a baby's eye color can change, which I thought was interesting that it's like, oh, just because he can fly now doesn't mean he'll be able to fly when he's older.
And they keep like throughout the movie, like new ones pop up.
Right.
Which I kind of like, because in the first movie that we see like four or five.
Yeah.
And then there's a short actually that also has those in it. But this one, you know, I like that they keep like adding to the mix along during the movie.
There's a lot of people out there in hiding because it is illegal, but there are a lot of people with powers out there. And so, yeah, it does become fun as you see them all start playing together.
Yeah.
But so they're in this, you know, witness protection like program, and we get another situation where when they're trying to bust what's the guy's name? Underminer.
Yeah.
Who's John Ratzenberger, mm-hmm. who's always in the Pixar movies.
Yeah.
They end up not really stopping him. They do stop some destruction, but it's still catastrophic.
Yeah, they do about as much help as Superman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
except they have repercussions.
Yes. Right.
So they stop the drill, but meanwhile these buildings have all collapsed, and you know the bank is a little bit damaged, and Underminer still gets away with money. Like so they really don't accomplish anything. And just like the first one, which was so smart and so savvy with these laws, like you know how they were talking about banning superheroes because of all the damage they do, and the guy sues them because he didn't want to be saved.
Right.
You know, they do another plan that here where the two agents who they end up apprehending them and they're interrogating him, and they're like, the bank was insured. Like everything was insured, and you would have caused less damage if you just let him get away.
Yeah.
And so it's really funny. And meanwhile, the Incredibles, you know, Mr. Incredible especially is just like, this, he just can't comprehend this. Like, you know, I'm out here trying to protect people and save people, and you guys just want to let them go.
Yeah.
And so with all this pressure from the governments and everything, Decker informs them that he's going to be, that they're going to be shut down. They have mm-hmm. 2 weeks left at the motel, but their whole protection agency for these heroes is over. And so at this point, they have to figure out what to do because they don't have a house. It was destroyed in the first one. They don't have any money. They don't have jobs anymore. You know, I mean, he lost his job in the first one. And so they're kind of out there trying to figure out what to do. And that's when these new characters come in. The
Devers.
The Devers. Okay. So it was Bob Odenkirk. And then who was the sister?
Catherine Keener.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm like, I knew I could recognize that voice. And I wasn't sure exactly what it was. But they basically.
I kept thinking it was the mom from Modern Family.
Oh, Julie Bowen.
Yeah.
I could see that. But no, Keener, now that she's the one that was in Get Out.
Yeah, she's the mom in Get Out.
That's the voice. Yeah. I'm like, I knew that voice. Okay. I thought they were both really good additions in this. But so they end up talking to Frozone. So he's out during this big fight with the Underminer. And they end up approaching Frozone. He gets away before the cops get the Incredibles. But they're like, you know, how would you like to not be hunted by the law or whatever he says to him? How would, you know? And so they pull up in this limo and he gets in and goes off. So we don't know what happens to him until he talks to Mr. Incredible and he says, hey, I talked to these people. They said they can help us. They can help us make superheroes legal again. And so that's when we're introduced to these new characters. And so I guess the story behind them, they're a telecommunications company of some sorts. They built this huge telecommunications empire. And the backstory is that
they're AT&T.
Yeah, there you go.
Or Comcast.
I was going to say. But the backstory, the reason why they want to help the Incredibles is their father was killed. Was the mother killed at the same time or later? Okay,
no, she died of heartbreak 3 months later.
There you go. Okay. So their father was killed during this time of superheroes. He was a huge proponent, and he was giving money to superhero causes, and he had a direct line to two of the superheroes at the time. And right after superheroes became illegal, their house is broken into, and instead of going to their panic room, you know, against the wishes of the mother.
Did they have panic rooms back then? I mean, there's a lot of things they have in this movie that they didn't have back then.
I think
then,
they've had panic rooms. I think panic rooms were something that
they were leftover fallout shelters.
Yeah, like I think that was fairly early on, like in New York.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I think they came back, in the 90s, but I think they've been around for a while.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So against the wishes of the wife who wanted them to go there, he says, no, I'll go call the superheroes up on the phones. But since they had just become illegal, they weren't answering the phones. And so he ends up getting shot by the two criminals. And so the siblings, you know, we're led to believe that the siblings want to do whatever they can to make supers legal again in the memory of the father. And that if they were legal, this would have never happened.
But you do get the hint that the sister is not quite on board with that version of events.
Yeah, it's you can tell early on. Like,
my own daughter spoiled this movie for me, by the way.
Really?
Because I read one of the stories at her her school.
Oh.
And she goes, it's the sister.
Oh, spoiler alert.
No, don't say anything. But she kept saying it was Bob's sister. And I was like, but yeah. She leaned over. Dad, I think she's the bad one.
Oh, my God.
Well, I was like, you were doing.
All you got to do is read her name.
Yeah. But it was.
Her name is Evil Endeavor.
Yeah.
Evelyn Deaver.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's funny. I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
That's really funny. But so, you get at first what I thought was going to happen was that they were orchestrating together.
Yeah.
I thought that they were going to put all the wheels in motion to get superheroes legalized.
Yeah.
And so they would find out that really the people financing it were in on it, but they're doing it like the best villains, the ones that were doing it for the right reasons, but we've been pulling the strings and everything.
Right.
But you know, again, spoilers, because that's what we do, but the brother is ignorant. He really wants
Supers
back.
I like this aspect that it wasn't that they were
the two of them.
It wasn't a plot. Like, because it also like this family, they're not dumb. You know what I mean? And so it's like, so they if they were both trying to fool them, I think they would see through it.
Yeah.
And so it stands to reason that they kind of fell for it initially because one of them was sincere in telling the truth.
Yeah.
You know, I also like the fact that, you know, Bob Odenkirk tends to play kind of sleazy, untrustworthy people.
Yeah.
And it was also a nice casting head fake in that. If you're getting this feeling of like, I don't know if I should trust him, you shouldn't have trusted the scenario, but you can trust him. I like that.
And that was the other thing too, is that when I found out that Bob Odenkirk was in this movie, I'm just like, oh, well, he's got to be the bad guy. Like,
right,
he has to be more than just, oh, he came in, not in the first one. He's a new character, but he's just going to like give them some money. Like, no, there's, I love the head fake of it. I think it was really smart.
That's something they did. And I saw more like in a trailer that I didn't really see in this movie is that like was to sort of monetize the camera footage.
Oh,
because they talk about there was a scene in one of the trailers where they're talking about like your approval ratings are up. And so I think as a, you know, telecom company, I think he did also have some interest in, you know, sort of making, you know, like
selling
channel.
A live stream to watch them. Yeah.
And that wasn't in this, which I thought was interesting because I think that is part of it. And I think they probably just took it out. It could have been for time, too.
Yeah.
But I also think I'm kind of glad that they didn't.
No, because it made
him
that character
like more
pure. Absolutely.
And in the end, kind of likable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This character really, I kept waiting for the reveal of like, he is a good person, but just has some bad, like he's a little misguided. Mm-hmm. And really, it doesn't come down to that. And he had no idea what his sister was up to the whole time. So you know, we end up seeing that there's this, well, I guess it jumps ahead a little bit, but the wife, you know, ends up getting a new job. So he talks her into going out and being the first to wear this body cam to where people can see the crime fighting she's doing. Because right now, all they see is a bunch of destruction and then the Incredibles walk out. They don't see that they were fighting the villain or how hard they were. In the end, they only see the casualties and the collateral damage of it. And so he says that, you know, Mr. Incredible is too... destructive.
The insurance fallout is a little, you know,
absolutely
problematic.
And so he ends up saying that Mrs. or Elastigirl is going to be the best one to pioneer this, and the other supers will follow eventually. And this is where, you know, there's a little bit of tension or a little bit of resentment, you know, and not just a little bit between Bob and his wife, because it's like he's wanted nothing more than to get back out there. The whole movie was about him going behind her back and fighting crime, you know, and lying about where he is and everything. And so he's been the one that since the beginning was never okay with retiring. And so now that there's a chance to legalize it and they can get back out there, the fact that he is not the one chosen, you know, it just builds for this really interesting, you know, character study.
I like the fact that, like, he wasn't happy about it, but it was never actually a bone of contention. It never rose to the level of fight or a rift in the marriage.
Or sabotaging it.
Right. Like, you could tell he was like, he'd rather be the guy.
Yeah.
But he was still, genuinely supportive.
Grin and bear it.
Yeah.
There was never the, you know, the stereotypical thing they could do is there would be the resentment and then the fallout and then it looks like they're going to get a divorce.
Yeah.
And then in the end, they save the day, work together, and they're back together.
Yeah, right.
You know, and they never do it like that. But what you do get is, you know, now Bob's at home with the kids and there's a lot of funny gags, but he's dealing with the daughter and her boyfriend issues. You know, he's dealing with this little baby that, you know, not only has these crazy powers, but, you know, just the staying up with a baby and now dealing with that. And then also like new math, you know, they make one of the villains to him is math and it's always changing, which is so funny. You know, they dealt with it back then with new math. And then now math is different too. So like with my son, who's 8, trying to do his math work, they've changed it once again. And I can totally relate because it's like, I know exactly how to get to that answer and I could do it within seconds, but they don't want you to do it that way.
Yeah.
And so I feel his pain there. That was definitely relatable. So I really like that. But meanwhile, his wife is out there. So they send her out to, is it supposed to be New York or some different town? I couldn't catch the name of the town.
No, it's not New York.
Yeah, it's just some big city, and I don't think it was a real
metropolis.
Yeah, there you go. But so she goes out, and you know, as the first one with this body cam footage, her first job is to track this villain. That's what is the Screen Slaver.
Screen Slaver.
So I thought that was a pretty clever name.
Well, and she's listening to. She's basically doing everything that her husband did in the first
the radio
movie
scanner,
that she was so adamantly opposed to.
Yeah,
but it's also odd that like. There again, I know it's kind of this mixture of times and eras and technology, but it's like they didn't have screensavers back then. So the fact that the name is a play on screensaver is but that wouldn't be a thing.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I can say that. I never. It was a clever name, but for the era, you're right. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, so yeah, I liked that, and I thought it was a really good commentary. Like this villain, the whole thing about them is that people are, you know, glued to their devices and
screens everywhere.
And this was a different time, even though this was set back in this older era, they basically pin it on television. But, you know, it's so true for today. And so I thought that was a really good commentary to work in the state of affairs today, but with the old timey flair. And so her first job is to chase down this.
But I don't think this is set in old timey.
I think it is.
No, I think it's set in
I think I read that there was something that established in the first one that it was like the mid 60s.
Really?
There's like a like a screenshot. It's
I
thought the same thing and
that.
I didn't study it.
I think
much.
It was just the art direction and pulling from different
and they're
aesthetic
also,
styles, but I never at no point have I ever.
We also only
this.
See them watching television shows from that era, right? They're
watching
Johnny Quest, they're watching Outer Limits.
But he's saying it's a different universe.
I think that's,
where that
like,
that would
I
be
think
modern.
That's just an aesthetic choice. I've never actually considered it to be a
period piece.
No,
interesting.
Mm-hmm. No.
But so there's this, what is it? A monorail? It's some sort of, you know, it's a high speed monorail.
It's got maglev.
That's opening in the city. And so at the grand opening, they cut the ribbon.
There's in the first one, there's a screenshot of him reading the newspaper and it reads May 16th, 1962.
Really?
But you have to it's not crazy that you didn't see that. It's like.
It's never even been like a consideration of mine.
But at least you know that that was the intention of the filmmakers.
Yeah.
I always, just because of the aesthetic, I thought, well, it's got to be old time. Even though they don't put a number on it up front, it just seemed like everything, television, cars, like it just.
Yeah.
But anyway, so she has to stop this runaway Amtrak, whatever this, you know, thing, monorail in the sky is, and it starts moving backwards as soon as the ribbon cutting happens. And so they don't know why this thing is out of control, but she gets a brand new Elasto bike, which is a souped up, electric vehicle with a lot of torque. And so she races off. She's going, you know, through wrong way traffic, and she's extending her body to like jump over cars. And it's a really cool scene. I will say, like, the action set pieces are so complex, and they're filmed like they're real, you know, real life, you know, and not animated. So, like, it has the feel of a live action car chase type of scene. It's just so amazing what they are able to do with animation now, and it's very cinematic, you know, and that's the whole point. Brad Bird has always been a proponent as animated films as films. Just because it's animated doesn't make it less of a film, and so he really pushes, I think, the boundaries of action animation here, and it's really, you're really into it, you know. And so she's going through all the traffic and everything. She eventually gets on top of the train, and when she breaks in, the guy, the conductor, has been hypnotized. So this is the first time that we've seen someone under the control of the screenslaver character. And so she's able to save the day just barely. But, you know, the city thanks her. Everyone, you know, is starting to, this is the beginning of people starting to accept superheroes. They're getting all the footage on camera.
She did it without destroying lots of stuff.
Right. Yes. Right. And so, yeah. And so, you know, meanwhile, she's getting all this praise, and she calls home, and Bob's been dealing with all this crazy stuff. And at first she's really worried. Like, as soon as he says, Oh, Jack, you know, and nothing else, and she's like, oh my God, what happened? I shouldn't have ever done this. Do I need to come home? Mm-hmm. And he's in, you know, and it clicks in his head. Like, I can't tell her anything that's been going on, even though it hasn't been catastrophic, but still, like,
he doesn't want, you know, he doesn't want to rain on her parade. He doesn't want to bother her with this kind of more mundane activity, yeah. You know,
and he also
doesn't want to be a failure as
right.
a father.
It's like, yeah. This is what he's going to do. He is his job to be incredible in any situation.
Yeah.
And so at this exact time, so now Violet is invisible, but you see a pint of ice cream walking out of the freezer because she's upset over the boyfriend not remembering her. You see the kid, Dash, is asleep over at the table with the new math book. Like, he just couldn't help him at all. And so the kid was still at night dealing with math. And then Jack is out fighting with a raccoon out in the backyard, which was hilarious. Oh, this was such a good scene of him just, we first see Jack's powers in this movie because he sees a raccoon outside and he phases through the window. He shoots laser beams at the thing. Does he turn into the demon too? Catches on fire.
Yeah, he has
starts
a whole
throwing
range
lawn chairs at the raccoon.
Yeah, he turns into fire and starts charging at the raccoon.
Yeah,
and
I think it was a really clever way to introduce his powers through this little fight with the raccoon, because you can't have him doing this with humans,
right?
Because, I mean, and the other thing you realize is, like, Jack could kill any of these people in an instant, right? And so the stakes would be too crazy if it were to be with the humans. And the animal doesn't end up getting hurt, so that's good. Like, you couldn't have him kill the animal, but you get this comedic.
It's easier to see the humor in it when this, even though you know they're not going to kill the animal either, the stakes are lower.
Yeah, exactly. And so I really like it. It was a really fun interaction. And again, I think Jack steals this movie. They did such a great job with him. But so Bob sees this all going on outside. And at first he's like, you know, oh my God, what are you doing out here? But then in a second, he gets so excited that his son has powers. Like, they didn't think Jack did. And so, you know, where a normal father might be worried, Mr. Incredible is like, you have powers.
My boy.
Yeah. So it's definitely a very funny scene. And again, Jack is so awesomely handled in this. But it gets to the point where he's not getting any sleep. And it's like he's dealing with all this stuff, and it's just too much for him. So he ends up taking Jack to Edna Mode.
Like, is this going to end up like Tully?
Yep, the housekeeper was all made up. He, you know, we don't see a lot of Edna Mode. I was surprised how, you know, it's just really.
Yeah, I thought we'd get a little bit more of her than we did too.
This scene and the next. So they find out that when the Devers, end up having, like, they want all the Incredibles to have this retro look because that's how they saw them when they grew up, and they end up having like a high-end fashion designer make the costumes, which, you know, Edna's not going to be happy about,
right?
And so, you know, the first thing she says, of course, when Bob comes you know, to her drive up in the camera, she's looking, you know, she lets him in and she just says the name of the guy. I can't remember the designer, but she's like, you know, whatever, you know, I don't even know the name, but design, you know, whatever, Calvin Klein, whatever.
With.
Yeah, it's funny. And of course, that's Brad Bird returning to do the voice of Edna Mode. So at first, when Bob asks her to babysit, she's like, I'm not a babysitter, I'm a fashion designer. And then she starts seeing Jack's powers, which she is fascinated by. And she's like, oh, yes, of course, I'll watch him. Get out of here.
Well, Jack mimics her, too. I mean, all of a sudden, like, he has her face.
And that's
another new power.
Yeah.
And she's like, yes.
Yeah. He can impersonate people along, you know, with what we saw earlier. Yeah. And so she's fascinated. And it was another funny scene because she's like, all right, thanks. I always enjoy our visits. Goodbye. And just shuts him out the door. Where you're just like, what is she going to do? Like, not that it would be anything malicious, but, like, you know that she's going to, like, try to harness the power or work on his powers or whatever. And so she gets him out of the door and he comes home and I think, what is it? Is it Dash or Violet who is just like, where's Jack? And
it's Violet, because that's where he starts to have it's his first moment of silence, and he tries to have a heart to heart with her.
Ah.
It was a nice moment because, you know, she kind of comes around and realizes, you know, it was a little bit of a overstep on the memory wipe.
Yeah. And so he's just like, yeah, he's over at Aunt Edna's. Yeah. And she's like, you left Jack-Jack with Aunt Edna or with Edna? And he's just like, yeah. Yeah, okay.
It'd be fine.
Yeah. So, anyway, so when he returns, it goes back and forth a bit, but when he returns, we end up seeing what Edna did for Jack-Jack. So she gave him a red suit that looks in line with the Incredibles outfits, but it's able to protect him, and it's also monitored by this remote control. So it's this little device. It almost looks like you're piloting a drone, but it has a screen in the middle of it. And so it senses everything he's about to do, and so when he turns into the demon, it has this lavender scented, you know, foam whatever that puts out the fire, and so it just basically gives him, it doesn't always stop what Jack-Jack's doing, but it lets him at least know how to prepare. Mm-hmm. And so he first was talking about how he tried cookies with the demon baby, and then she's like, well, you can't use cookies because that always results in the demon baby. So she gives him this whole formula, gives him the controller, and kind of sends him on his way. But we're going to see how this controller comes into play later on. But that's all you see of Edna, which, I mean, I was, you know, she's such a fun character, and, you know, I feel like I was expecting her to come back around at least in the end. Mm-hmm. I think it's Brad Bird does a good job. I'm glad that he came back to voice her. And,
well, I like that. So the two times we see Edna Mode in both of the movies, Edna Mode does not leave that house.
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
Everything happens within there. You know, because we see Edna twice in the first movie because Bob goes there, and then Helen goes there.
Yeah.
So it's always at that house.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, well, you know, that's kind of a fun way to sort of keep it contained.
Yeah.
And she's not a superhero, so.
Right.
Yeah, she's going to want to stay where it's safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She obviously has endless funds and security, and, you know, it's like she's safe in her house, and no one needs to know, you know, what's going on there. So, meanwhile, Elastigirl's out there, and she's getting more and more good press. The Devers have a soiree where they've invited other superheroes. So, all these supers have started to come out of hiding, and so we're introduced to a lot of new characters, a lot of fun designs, and, you know, just a lot of
new toys.
Yeah. Did you guys get the sort of acceptance undertones here? I was like
there's every single type of
and I was like, especially like trans and you know,
was
I
there
was,
a,
from the vibe one I definitely well, got that.
Yeah, and trans, and Brick,
yeah,
I'm like, that's a woman. Right,
I didn't even notice.
I think they played up the, you know, it was cool. They showed it was very diverse. I mean,
it was about acceptance, and like what they're saying is like, I didn't feel like I could come out, and I was like, whoa.
Oh yeah, it's funny. I didn't even.
They were all in hiding until Elastigirl made it mainstream to be a superhero, and now they all started coming out.
And I'm like, man,
it's cool.
In this one movie, Brad Bird's able to like get that, you know, in a way that isn't like,
but where like someone
like
could miss it. Yeah, it's so subtle. And but it's not a bad way, but they double speak. I mean, they're saying two different things.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's a metaphor. It's a great metaphor.
Absolutely.
And you know, a lot of people will miss it, but for the people that are looking for that, it's something that they can own.
And like a void.
Void. Yeah.
I was like, well, I mean, they didn't even really kind of just from a look and feel.
As soon as you saw her, we're doing that.
Which I thought was awesome, because it's cool. Like if you see it, great, and if you don't, it's like, it's great. It's fun because we know it's like, yay, more powers.
But it's like, it's 2018, you know, this is the world we're living in. Mm-hmm. And honestly, how much hate would they get in this day and age, you know, compared to 14 years ago,
right,
if all the new superheroes were just white men?
Yes.
It just, you can't do it anymore. So it's cool, and I think it was a neat move and very subtle and well handled. But so they meet all these different superheroes, and then there's also like an ambassador or some kind of a UN council member here that likes Elastigirl and a fan of her work. And so whenever she leaves this meeting, she leaves on like helicopters, but Screenslaver is there to, you know, what it looks like is trying to take her out. And so we don't really know what the agenda is yet of Screenslaver, but they seem to be against, you know, you're not sure if they're doing it because they're against television and against people being zombies, or if they're against superheroes. But obviously, they're trying to lure Elastigirl to her demise for whatever reason. And so they end up hijacking the helicopter. And so there's three helicopters. And so Elastigirl has to go in another really good action scene. But she slingshots herself up and is able to get to the helicopters. And she's jumping. She jumps through the window of one. And they say, where is the senator, the ambassador, and ends up going over to the next one, and there's helicopters crashing into each other. I like that when she crashes through the window of the second helicopter where the person is, she tries to save, that like the security guard or the, you know, the Secret Service agent like aims a gun at her, like, because those are little subtle touches where in the real world, you know, that all these politicians travel with protection, right? And, but in cartoons or in animated things, you think they're not going to really even show that character, like why add another person to animate or whatever. But I like that she had a Secret Service agent that would be trying to protect her.
Right.
They don't know what's going on.
Right.
And then she says, no, this is Elastigirl, stand down. She's trying to save us and everything. So she ends up, she gets the helicopter real low and everybody that can swim, she gets out of the helicopter. But I think the main ambassador, whoever she is,
it's an ambassador.
Oh, yeah, she goes, can you swim? And everybody who says yes, he just basically
pushes out.
That was funny.
Kicks out
at low height, into the river, and then the ambassador says no, and so she knows that she's got to take care of her. So she's trying to save the helicopter, but she also has to worry about this ambassador rolling around in the helicopter. So at the last minute, right before the thing explodes, she's able to get her to safety. So she nearly escapes, but once again has another, this is another, plus for superheroes. So they got all this footage on camera. So just like the Devers' intentions, this is, it's working, right? And so they actually saved someone high up that, and so not only do you have the support of this person, but you saved their life. Like that's pretty.
Yeah. They have an advocate, to your point, a very high up, powerful advocate. So and we get to see like Bob, he's constantly like catching this because the news coverage is, there's a lot of Elastigirl in the news. Yeah.
So he's flipping through and like you said, it's handled really well. Like this character can't help but to feel jealous because he wants to be out there, but it's not in a, it's not in a bad way. It's just human nature. It's like, she's out there getting all the accolades and he was used to everyone singing the Mr. Incredible theme song. Uh-huh. Like, when he meets the Devers, another great scene with Bob Odenkirk, he's singing all the superheroes theme songs. That was another hint because, think about Syndrome. He was a super fan as a kid in the first one and ends up being bad. So I think there's a little bit of a reflection there, the parallel between here. Now you've got another superhero fan. Like, is this too good to be true or is he going to be scorned or something in the end? But, I'd come to find out he was not. When they get back to the Devers place, Elastigirl talks to the sister. And so she's like, we've got to find a way to track down Screenslaver. He somehow was able to track us. He's advanced in technology. We need to find his signal somehow. And so the sister ends up saying, by 5 a.m. tomorrow, I can have this device ready, this tracking device. And so the next day, supposedly Elastigirl is somewhere else, so Screenslaver you'd think does not know, but she is tracking the signal whenever Screenslaver hijacks all the televisions. And so she gets closer and closer and closer, and finally we see an old apartment. This looks like a straight ass Seven in this scene. This is just this is like the I think was a cool homage, but it's just like when Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman are going after the bad guy in Seven. So she traces it to this apartment, and the apartment has all this hypnosis stuff. So as we know, that this person can hypnotize people. So you see all these really cool devices. It's obviously a bunch of junk and tech stuff scattered all over the place. But at first here, this is where I thought we were going to get some kind of reveal. Like I thought we were going to see one of the Devers or one, we were going to see some kind of clue, but really all this is just a trap for Elastigirl. And she ends up going inside of this cage and Screenslaver, who we think is Screenslaver, locks the door and they have a pretty good fight. And so in the end, she's able to stop him. I can't remember what exactly happens, how she takes him out.
I'm trying to remember.
Like the Screenslaver is shocking her and she is really damaged. She's running. Screenslaver ends up running out of the apartment. And it's a really good chase scene. They pull the fire alarm, and so people are starting to come out of their rooms. And Elastigirl is running and knocking into people. But eventually, in the end, outside, how does Elastigirl take?
Oh, she just like slingshots her, you know, and plows into him.
Okay.
And catches him.
Gotcha. Okay, so she's able to tackle him, and yeah. She takes off the mask, and it's no one that you know. So I think this is the first time where
I'm like, pizza delivery guy.
Yeah,
right?
We end up finding that out, but I was like,
and he also seems to be like, you know, kind of confused. You know, he's not like twirling his
mustache.
You can
tell. Well, he goes, like, what happened? I don't know what you're talking about. But I think this is really cool the way they did the reveal, or will do it in the end, is because you're thinking, oh God, it's the brother and the sister. They're in on it. Whoever they pull the mask off of is going to be dun, dun, dun.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Scooby-Doo.
And it's this kid that you've never seen before. And he is very out of it, like Dan said. And so I really like that, because at this point you're like, oh, something else is up, because I knew it was going to be one of the brother or sister. But when they did that, I'm like, well, how could it be? Because they're really smart with the way they show you. They show you the brother and sister watching footage of Screenslaver.
Right.
So if it's one of them, how could it be them if they're watching it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
they run a telecommunications company.
Exactly. So they've got the tech, at least one of them does. And so anyway, this kid is captured, and everyone celebrates. They say, look what superheroes did. So not only do they have Elastigirl, you know, stopping the monorail, saving the ambassador's life, but now taking out the threat, you know, supposedly. And so they get to the point where people are going to now sign the new laws that legalize supers.
I'm like, boy, they changed public opinion fast.
Right? Yeah. Like, it was definitely very expedited. So they're on the track now where everything's good. They're being celebrated. But Helen,
it doesn't sit right with her.
Yeah, no. She starts to question it. She says something just doesn't feel right about this. She should be happy, but she just feels that more is going on. So at the celebration again at the Devers, she goes into like this editing bay where they have the footage. You know, she starts scrolling through it all, doing the enhanced type stuff. You know, she's going back and forth through the footage and zooming in. And she sees whenever she was face to face with Screenslaver, in the background there's a television in the lair, and it is the footage straight from her body cam.
Right.
So somehow Screenslaver is able to tap into hers, which she said is a closed loop. She talks to the sister and says, how could Screenslaver possibly have access?
Right.
And the sister tries to do a good job of just playing it off like, oh, well, we must have gotten hacked. He must be very advanced, right? And so this is where she kind of uncovers it. I think that this is where the sister turns on her, right?
Yeah, the sister owns up, and she ends up slapping the goggles on her.
Yeah, so she figures it out that there's no way this could have happened. And so the sister, puts these mind control goggles, which, she sees the mask. So the sister gives her the mask, or the brother actually gives her the mask at the party, is like, this is as a token of appreciation, a souvenir. And so she takes the mask and is like, this kid didn't know what was going on. He was a pizza delivery boy, unless he was being controlled, and pulls out mind control goggles. And then that's when the sister is like, well, you figured it out, and slaps him on her. So now we know we have Elastigirl under her control. So at this point, we get the conversation between the two of them. Elastigirl's tied up, and she puts her in this like sub-freezing temperature, which was another cool like Bond villain-esque type thing. Like, they've got the hero, but she's like, well, I'll just stretch myself out of this. And she's like, no, it's freezing temperatures. If you do that, you'll probably just break. You'll be frail and
you'll
break.
Be brittle.
Yeah. So she starts explaining what happened. And as we got the little hints of in the past, the sister did not agree with the decision of the father, you know, to try to call the supers. She always blamed supers for the death of the parents. And if they would have just been illegal and the dad would have gone to the safe room, their family would have been all together.
Yeah.
And so she has orchestrated this character to you know, without the brother knowing, she has created this Screenslaver and has been controlling these people to try to eliminate supers once and for all. And so her master plan is to get control of all the superheroes and then have them end up turning on the public as a whole. And so she ends up putting the goggles on Elastigirl and controlling her. And then she calls Bob up and she says, hey, you know, at this point they're on the big ship because they're supposed to do the proclamation signing to make supers legal at sea on their huge yacht. And so, or like, it's a huge cruise ship looking thing.
The hydrofoil.
There you go.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that a real thing?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I couldn't. Okay. Cause I'm like, wow, they're like underwater and they're going really
pulled from, Brad Bird, pulling from Johnny Quest again.
Oh, I didn't realize. I know Johnny Quest, but I've only seen a handful of episodes here and there.
Yeah, that was a big thing.
I like it. Okay. So this whole signing is going to go on at sea. So it ends up that the sister calls up Bob and says, hey, you know, they've got your wife. Just come quickly to the boat. Doesn't explain much, but he's like, all right, I'll be there in a minute. And so he ends up getting his suit on and he's leaving the house and he tells Violet, like, just stay here. He called up Frozone.
Lucius, yeah.
Yeah. And he calls him up and says, hey, she's in trouble. Come over here and help protect the kids. So he leaves for the boat. Ends up, they get a knock on the door and it's all the superheroes we were introduced to earlier, but they all have the mind control goggles on. And so the kids at first are like, this is weird. Like we're okay. Like our friend is going to come over and watch us. And they're just like, you know, let us in. And he shows up, Frozone shows up and realizes something's up and blasts them all. Really good fight scene here.
Yeah.
I like that we get to see all those different cool powers, like the void, you know, I really like that. The teleportation,
like
stuff.
A little portal that you keep slopping. Yeah. Sliding through and landing.
Yeah, like each hand has a portal. It's really cool. So like when they try to escape, they keep running back into the house. Like they're running out of the house, back into it, which comes to play later at a really cool part. But there's been this running gag where Bob sees on television that some rich guy had bought his Incredimobile. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he's like, they told me this thing was gone or
destroyed.
Yeah. And so this guy had bought it and he goes upstairs to get a controller and he was going to remote control, get the car back to the house. And then he decides that he doesn't want to steal it. Like he wants to be a good guy and doesn't want to do that to this guy. And Dash sees the controller and what it can do though, and is really excited about it. So in this scene, Dash runs and gets that and he calls for the Incredimobile to come, you know, help them escape. And so they get into the vehicle. Lucius tells them to match their voice print so they can control the vehicle. And before he can get in it, though, he has the goggles slapped on him and instantly starts attacking the car. So they make their escape. The three kids, Dash, Violet, and Jack, they make the escape. And I thought it was kind of cool how they didn't have to, I mean, it was almost like a kit from Knight Rider type thing where it's like they didn't have to drive the car or anything. They didn't even have to tell it, like instructions. They just say escape or you know, get away, and I think this gave it character.
And I also think that's Pixar's way of making sure kids don't try to drive cars.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, that, and also, you know, they were able, you can also look at the story and it's like, if they escaped on their own, you know, you're gonna be like, well, really?
Yeah,
they're so two very, very inexperienced and a baby.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was their way of just sort of like, okay, well, we got to get them away.
Yeah.
And I like it because, again, the car had character. It was it wasn't as much a character as kid. It didn't talk to them, but like it did its own, its movement the way they had it escape. Yeah. It was a character of its own. And obviously it was Mr. Incredible's awesome car. So like it had the capability to do these things.
And it was a great plot device to get the kids to where the rest of the action is going to be.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So this car has all these abilities, and it ends up when they escape and finally get to the water, they know they're trying to get to the boat to save their parents, and Dash says something like, I wish this could follow the boat. And then the car, there's a knob like down by the dashboard, and it turns to boat or water, and so it starts, you know, going to them. And so, all three of them, in the earlier scene before they were attacked at the house, they all get their costumes, and Violet at this point is disavowed superheroes. And so, Dash is like, I thought you gave that up. And she's like, well, Mom needs our help. Dad was leaving in his outfit. And so they get all their costumes back together and bring the moms in case she needs it later. So they end up getting on the ship. What does the car end up doing? Ejector seats. That's
ejector
the other
seats.
One. He says, I wish this car had ejector seats to get us on there. And Violet's like, what'd you say? And then the knob turns again to ejectors and they're all launched up onto the ship. And then I really liked it. This is really like a kind of a, these movies really, this one in particular reminds me of spies and Bond stuff. And they have this really cool, like stealthy infiltration of the ship where they're trying to sneak around the superheroes, the bad superheroes who are being controlled. But Violet basically tells Dash to stay in one of these rooms with Jack while she leaves, and she turns invisible. But she ends up knocking over a potted plant.
Yeah.
And I think it's not
Void.
Void. I always want to say Vibe, but Void, who ends up seeing like the dirty footprints walking away. So she ends up going to take care of Violet. Meanwhile, Jack decides to phase through a wall. So Dash has no way to keep up with him or knows where he is going. And so he phases through a wall. Jack runs after him. They end up meeting back up, all three of the kids. Well, the two kids. Violet's like, mm-hmm. "Where's Jack? Jack?" And Dash's like, "I don't know." So they end up getting the controller out of this backpack. I also liked that they had a baby bag with them.
Yeah.
Because did you notice that they stopped to change Jack's diapers in one of the scenes?
I didn't. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah,
touch
it was super quick, and you just see that like Jack's laying on his back, and there's like a diaper folded out. And
I didn't catch that. That's awesome.
That's
yeah.
something that, you know, if you didn't have such smart writers and like Brad Bird wrote this script, people wouldn't include that little touch, but it's such a nice touch because it doesn't matter if he's a superhero, he's a baby.
Right.
He has a diaper. Yeah. We see a scene that's funny earlier when the father, Bob, is left at home with Jack for the first time. He's holding up the baby, looking at him, and his diaper gets heavier.
Yeah.
Like, again, another little subtle touch. But someone might ask, and again, it wouldn't ruin the movie, but like, when do they ever, I mean, this is a baby. Does he go to the bathroom?
Yeah, they put it in there.
They put it in there. I love it. Just I mean, it's like a 2-second little flash of them, you know, cuts to them. The diaper's open on the ground. Mm-hmm. And they go to a next scene. But anyway, so they're bringing this diaper bag along.
And they probably sold a sponsorship to Huggies for like $15 million.
Yeah, there you go. So they get out the controller and you see this baby floating vertically. And so like, oh, he's on an elevator. But I thought it was funny before they said elevator. I thought he was just like flying around.
Floating around the
ship.
You see
him going straight
up
on the controller. So really funny imagery. I would not be surprised if there's some sort of Jack spinoff. Like he is... the character's amazing in this
There's
movie.
Already a Jack doll and a smaller raccoon doll.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Do they fight?
I don't know.
You can make it with your imagination. Yeah. Action figures.
Action figures.
Take bets.
Yeah. So anyway, they end up running off of him, and meanwhile they're having to battle all these superheroes. And then you'll have to cut to Bob. So Bob ends up getting under the control of the sister in Screenslaver 2. He shows up and is like, "Where is she?" And him and, is it Helen? Helen? Okay.
Helen.
Bob and Helen start fighting. So like he sees that it's Helen, and all of a sudden you see like a hand come out of the other side of the screen and hit him, and they start fighting. And he's like, hey, it's me. What are you doing? And then, I don't know if
she
Screenslaver controls her or if she did it, but cause she was reaching in her, like her robe or whatever, the sister.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if there was a control or if it was just getting the glasses ready.
It was the glasses.
But somehow...
But they make it look like she was going to... You know, it looks very ominous, the shot.
Yeah.
I was like, oh,
what's she
going to
do? Yeah. But it ends up that Helen is able to kiss him and get him kind of under control for a second. And the sister ends up handing Elastigirl the glasses and she slaps him on Bob. So now you have these two... You have three of them, all three of the main adult superheroes, you know, Frozone in the past scene, Helen, and now Bob are under their control. And so they're getting ready to do the signing, and the brother, Bob Odenkirk, says, where are they? Like, they're getting ready to do this. And the sister ends up saying, the superheroes didn't want, you know, to outstage the newer ones. And so they'll be there when it's time. And so they eventually come out and they've got all the glasses. All the superheroes have the mind control glasses, and they're getting ready to do this proclamation signing. And all this is going down, and it ends up turning into this one huge action set piece. But before that, I think, is when they televise it, right? They're televising the signing, and then they cut to the superheroes after it's been signed, and they say, "We are no longer going to be protecting you.
Right.
We're going to protect ourselves. Like, thank you for making this legal."
Yeah.
You know, which obviously
we're the superior beings.
Yeah. And this is obviously a very cartoonish, very Bond villain-esque cartoonish plot. Like if this were to happen, I'm sure, you know, it just seemed very, but it fit with the tone of the movie. And then they cut back to this newscaster who is just like this really goofy, you know, always has this goofy grin on his face, but he's like, sorry about the technical difficulties. We'll get back to you. And then, it's just this huge, this is a huge action set piece. This is like a 20-minute long, basically action set piece of all the kids trying to fight and get their parents out of control. They end up breaking the glasses on the mother first, I think. And she's
Jack basically pulled them, but like.
Oh, yeah, because so Jack goes up to his mom and is like, "Mom, he hasn't seen her. She's been gone all this time." And he sees her and she's looking at him, like, "What is this?" And he gets angry and gets the glasses off of her.
Yeah.
And then at first she's mad. She's like, "What are you kids doing here?" And then she's like, "Oh, you came to save us." And, at first they wanted to keep the kids completely out of things. And that's how she is an initial reaction. But then she's obviously more accepting, and she's like, oh, this is awesome. We're a team. And so they, one by one, they all start, they pull the glasses off Bob, and then they get them off Frozone.
Yeah,
and
I liked
all,
how they chipped away getting glasses off people, and then they would help.
Yeah.
Which just kind of had this snowball effect.
Yeah, like exponential. So you got to see a lot of really cool powers and a lot of individual fights between the different characters. And so they're able to get every single one of the new supers away from the glasses, except for the guy that can crunch metal. And
the crusher.
Yeah. And so I think it's, I don't know if it's Dash. Someone realizes that he's not there freed at the signing. And so Bob is trying to go to the engine room to stop it. The sister has now set the yacht. What's the thing called? The
hydrofoil.
The hydrofoil is on a collision course with the city. And so they can't get to the control room. The crusher has crushed all the pipes and everything around. And they have a really funny moment where I think Bob's able to get the glasses off him, right? But then he asks him, like, have you ever uncrushed anything?
He's like, what? Why would I uncrush something?
Yeah, and then I think he's like, when you punch someone, have you ever unpunched someone? Like, it's a really good
line. Why would I do that?
Yeah. And so, you know, it's again, maybe a little silly, but it's a reason why they can't stop the boat. So they have to come up with this elaborate scheme to where Frozone is going to shoot the water on the right side of the ship and try to steer it, but then Bob has to go underwater and turn the rudder because they can't get to the control room. And so they end up, Incredible takes the anchor off of the chain, straps the anchor around him, and now he's on this race against time. He tells Dash, lower me down, and as soon as the boat is clear of the city, pull me back up. So now we've got all this stuff going on at once where the sister has escaped in a jet. The hydrofoil has like a jet that's in the top of it. Really cool design that it's like not an escape pod. It's a whole escape jet. And so she is trying to escape. She takes the brother with her who has been hypnotized as well because there's a big TV in front of the all the people there. She says, come with me. She's escaping on the ship. Mr. Incredible's underwater. And so Elastigirl ends up going after the sister, and it's another really good scene. And this is where she gets the help of Void, who
you have a mental block on that.
I do.
Name.
Well, it's because there's Vibe, who has almost DC character Vibe has almost the exact same powers. Ah. Like it's a clear.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, so Vibe was always very, in her interactions before she was hypnotized, looked up to Elastigirl and obviously was a big fan. And so it was neat that she was able to work together with someone she looked up to.
Yeah.
And so she ends up, Elastigirl does her stretchy thing where she slingshots her again, but the jet is already so far that there's no way she would be able to get in there. And so she asks Vibe.
Boy.
it's like once you're programmed, it's she asked Void to get her into the ship, and so it was a really cool scene because she has to try it three or four different times. And it's great. So Elastigirl like just misses the jet, and then she goes through the void and back on top of it, and then falls and rolls off of it, and eventually, like on the fourth time, she's able to get her just far enough to where it's inside of the jet, and then closes off the void and gets her inside. But the sister has other plans. She ends up taking the jet straight up, so there obviously is a lack of oxygen, and so Elastigirl fights her way through, you know, the cabin, and everything's, she's rolling around and hitting the sides of it and everything. She makes it into the cockpit, but she's already gone up so high that she starts to get woozy. I don't know what the exact term is that she used, but she's oxygen deprived. She's getting silly. And so
nitrogen narcosis.
Okay. And then
nice. Well done.
Yeah, very nice.
Scuba diving.
Yeah. Ah, there you go.
And it's funny because I was just thinking like, that's it, because that's a major, they say that a lot in 47 meters down.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Rapture of the deep.
Yeah. So is that when there's like too much pressure, or is it just start losing your oxygen?
The oxygen blend. Yeah.
Okay. So the sister ends up saying like, oh, you're getting silly. And that's because first you get silly with this nitrogen narcosis and then you die. And so she's able to pull it together at the last second. What does Elastigirl end up doing? I can't remember how. She ends up hitting her something and getting the oxygen mask. Yes. Oh, she hits her out the window, right?
Yeah.
I thought again for a second they were going to kill the villain like the first one.
Yeah, I know.
Right? Because in the first one, you're like, wow, Syndrome doesn't get a chance for redemption.
Nope.
They kill Syndrome, and it's because of capes. And the jet on a plane too.
Yeah,
funny enough. And then at these crazy heights, this jet is up, you know, high enough where they can't even breathe.
Yeah,
and then Elastigirl hits the sister out the window and is falling. And so it's like, wow, are they really going to do this again? But she's able to put on the oxygen mask. She's able to, you know, steer the plane back down to a normal level that eventually crashes. And then she jumps out the window and skydives to go catch the sister, which I like.
Yeah.
You know, I always like it when they have a chance to like catch the villain and put mm-hmm. them in jail, you know, and it's kind of like the old, it's like, I'm a big fan of Batman. You know, you always like that closure, or at least the temporary closure of like, okay, they saved the day. They got the villain. They're in jail, you know, and they can answer for their crimes.
Yeah.
And so she's able to,
and you can use them again.
Right. Well, yeah. And that's the main part in comics. Like, yeah, don't kill them off. So she's able to save her at the last minute whenever she's like crashing down to the ship. Void is able to open up another void and says, open up your parachute. You know, like in her mind, she's saying, open it up. And Elastigirl does. She turns herself into a parachute so that she can protect them. And Void like has them roll onto the ship at a slow speed. And so, yeah, I mean, that pretty much wraps it up. The brother again shows that he had no part in this. When she was trying to smuggle him onto the jet, he ends up jumping back onto the cruise ship. The television that had all the ambassadors and people under control, he ends up breaking it. So like,
yeah,
you know,
he's helping save the day. Like he's not.
They're reassuring you. Like he had no intention to ever. He didn't orchestrate it and had no intention of ever following the sister on this crazy plan. He is a good guy. He loves superheroes just like the father. So he ends up helping people and saving them. But yeah, they capture the bad guy and she ends up going to jail. And I think they say something like, well, if she has enough money, because the brother's like congratulating them and they're like, sorry about your sister, but if you have enough money, you'll probably won't even.
Yeah. Rich people don't go to jail. Yeah. Like, yeah, there's nice little.
And so, yeah, I liked that again, commentary and, you know, and he's and Bob Odenkirk's just like, oh, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But you know, it's, they leave it open like this is going to be the beginning of a beautiful friendship type of thing.
Right.
You know, you can see that like super,
he's going to be their backer.
I was going to say their financer. Clearly he's going to be a part of the team in some way. But because of everything that happened and all the footage that they have, they end up keeping superheroes legalized, mm-hmm. which is a cool opening for the next one. So they don't have to sneak around. They can actually be in the public eye and be the heroes that they want to be in these first two movies, or at least be viewed as. And yeah, they kind of just leave it open. They leave a nice closure for Violet. She gets her date.
Her date, yeah. But he still doesn't remember her, but he kind of does. Yeah. But yeah,
he meets her.
Remembers her from the restaurant.
Yeah, from the restaurant scene.
There's the one we didn't mention, but the dad takes him to the restaurant. He works, and they drive all the way there, and then he ends up embarrassing her because she like sucks in the water and blows it out her nose. Yeah. And so he's like, "Are you the girl with the water?" She just runs away. But so it's a really nice closure for the whole family. You know, they're all together. Superheroes are legalized. It's open for more adventures and someone with the money that can bankroll them. That's pretty much it. I will say the movie's almost 2 hours long.
Yeah. Does not feel it.
It does not. When it was over, I was not at all disappointed. So I don't mean this negatively, but I'm like, it's over. Like that's it.
Yeah.
As in like, oh my gosh, we waited 14 years. It was a totally fun ride, but it went by so fast that I'm like, I'm going to have to go see this again to enjoy it.
Some of it is it doesn't do what a lot of movies do where there's lots of kind of fake endings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where they like kind of catch the bad guy and then they get away again or whatever. Like it's got.
You're always expecting more.
Yeah.
Because there are so many fake out endings.
Right.
And where this just had such a good, good pacing and it went through the plot and they took care of the bad guy and that was it. Once they did it, it wasn't the,
Well, and there's, it ends similar to the last one where it ends where like the next thing's just about to start. And
right.
There's a
I felt bad for this kid.
But Violet's like, no, out of the car. He has to get out of the car.
Yeah.
And they get him out. She tells him to buy the seats. And she says, like, fifth row seat or something like that.
Yeah.
I'll be there after the previews.
And they off they go because she doesn't want him to see she finally got her date. She does not want him to see.
Doesn't want him to get mind wiped again.
Yeah.
So
that was good. Yeah. I just feel like. Yeah, hopefully in the next one, they do whatever they have to do and they get back in time for the movie.
Yeah.
I just felt bad for that kid and for Violet. I'm like, geez, of course something has to come up. I loved it. I thought it was great. It looked amazing while still keeping the tone and the look
movie.
Of the first one. And it's fun. Yeah. It's a really fun movie.
It is.
And think of I mean, they had so much weight on their shoulders. Mm-hmm. It's been 14 years. They even have an introduction by the cast saying,
right, yeah,
saying, sorry, it's taken us long, so that, but it will be worse.
Was not just at the screening?
No, that's a thing that played everywhere.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't know if it was ever. Yeah,
yeah, I read online about it before that people opening night had said Thursday night they saw it. But, you know, they have, you know, Helen Hunt and Craig T. Nelson and I think is it Samuel Jackson. They have a bunch of the actors on there saying, sorry, but it is worth the wait.
Yeah.
And I completely agree. They had a big responsibility with a sequel to a movie like this, and especially after the time. And
well, they've done it before with the Toy Stories.
Well, you know, and I found it interesting about
but not
that,
the time
that intro is that sometimes those things feel
there
very,
was a pretty good gap between two and three.
Yes,
not
there was.
But 14 there years.
Yeah,
though.
No, but not this three, but it was still a good.
Because everybody's like, 14 years.
Yeah.
Like,
but they pulled it off.
But those intros are usually sometimes are kind of like, cheesy.
Yeah.
This one, I also thought it did a good job because, and I don't know that it's completely intentional, but it de-Lasseters Pixar.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
Because I'm like, oh, that's really smart. Because usually when we would see those, and Pixar did them a lot.
Yeah.
Sometimes only through certain theater chains.
Right.
Because like AMC, they'd be like, oh, I'm John Lasseter at AMC. We're so
yeah.
Anyway, they did that. And I was like, oh, this is a good way to like sort of like take his name out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. But that's it.
Is his name
on the credits for this one? It is for the short film.
I don't know.
If he was involved, I think legally it has to be.
Well, of course.
That's the problem they're having with Roseanne, where they want to do a spinoff, but she owns the characters, and so they still need her permission to do it. So
right, but yeah, it was one of those things. I was just like,
So, Dan, do you have a video recovery for us?
I do, and it's one of, as I was watching it, in the movie. You caught it.
Yeah.
You see Quest on a building.
Right.
And I'm like, that is the Johnny Quest logo.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, my God, are they going to, you know, part of me is like, oh, I really want them to make Johnny Quest part of this world.
Yeah, that would be cool.
But it's so pulled from Johnny Quest. Yeah.
Was it, I mean, was it an advertisement or was it the, like it's their head?
No, it was on a building.
It looked like
Stark Tower.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
it's the Quest logo.
It was the Quest logo.
Yeah, they're saying that this entity exists in this world.
And then later on, though, Johnny Quest is
they're watching
Johnny Quest, and Brad Bird has said, like, in animated movies he feels like it should be a rule that when characters are watching television it should be animated, which I was like, yeah, good idea, although technically Outer Limits was not animated, but the animated intro, because they're also watching the Outer Limits.
Yeah.
Well, so now, was that Quest scene, it was obviously super high definition and everything. Did they create it for the movie, or is that out of...
No,
that
no,
sure
no,
looked
no.
like original
that,
footage
That
to
looked
me.
Like original footage.
Really? Okay.
So Johnny Quest, when I saw that, I the first thing I went to was like, God, Johnny Quest has such an influence on this movie. You know, so much, you know, like the hydrofoil and the villains and the, you know,
kids
children.
Fighting.
Kids fighting. Guns, children at actual risk. So, you know, I was like, you know, I went back and the original Johnny Quest aired it over a year, and I think it was 1964 or 63. It was originally just 26 episodes.
I was going to say, isn't that one with a surprisingly small amount of episodes?
26 episodes over the scope of it.
That's crazy.
The span of a year.
Because the entire collection, I found that out because I saw the entire collection on sale, and it said like all 26 episodes, the complete series.
Yeah. Now, they brought it back a couple times, but the original run was only, those 26 episodes. And what's interesting about Johnny Quest is, I was like, I think this is a huge influence. So I went, and Brad Bird, in interviews now, is talking about how much Johnny Quest influenced him and also influenced the movie. He's like, oh, that's totally from Johnny Quest. And then, and in the earlier movie, it's the same thing. Well, he's actually on from the DVD release, which, you know, I don't know, 12, 14 years. It was before Incredibles, I believe, came out. He's on the DVD.
Well, it would make sense, though, since that's Hanna-Barbera, which is part of, isn't that part of the Time Warner, all that? So, like, and he was making movies.
He's,
Iron Giant was he'd have been
sense.
In that, he'd have been in that world.
Yeah, and he's gushing about Johnny Quest. And it's funny because in talking about it and looking at it, it's like, Johnny Quest was an actual primetime animated series when it came out. It wasn't aimed at kids.
Oh, that was primetime? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and it was primetime. And what's interesting is it had such a unique look because I think it's Doug Wildey, this artist that they brought in, Hanna-Barbera brought in, you know, he was an artist. He was like a comic book cover artist,
right,
and an illustrator. So the look was very illustrative. And not of you know,
like, it wasn't cartoony,
not
like
at
that,
all.
Like it, yeah, it was.
It looks like Archer looks today. Kind
yeah,
of. But it's
yeah.
It, the style is so unique. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's yeah. A it's a very like you know like a heavy shadow. And he did he broke a lot of rules of well, he didn't come from animation, so he broke rules of animation. Yeah. And he brought in people who were like, you know, drew for Popular Science and stuff like that. So like everything was grounded.
Such a
in
great
this
looking
look.
Car. Nothing looked no, like
it's
that.
So
nothing,
unique
and
yeah.
Still doesn't.
Yeah,
but it's like because of that. Such a heavy influence in a lot of what you see in the art direction and the design and the character and all that stuff is sort of, you know, in this.
Well, even the, I think a lot of the, I feel like they borrowed a lot of the tech design.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
well,
it's
that,
the technical stuff that looks.
The boat.
Right.
The plane. The
yeah.
Cars. Like, everything in that. It's like, oh, my God. It's,
yeah.
It's totally, and Robert has, not, I mean, he
Jack-Jack
absolutely
is,
says.
Jack-Jack is Bandit.
Oh, totally. Yeah, Bandit. The only thing that was not designed by, the Bandit, you know, if you ever watch Bandit, the Bandit has a slightly different look than the characters,
right.
And it's because that was not designed by Doug Wildey.
Lord.
And I'm done. No, so, I mean, if you have not seen Johnny Quest, it's a 26-episode run. Try to catch it. It is so good and still holds up. Now,
don't waste your time with the ones that they brought back.
No. The one from the 60s. Yeah, and yes, there is racism.
I was going to ask you that.
Yes.
I haven't watched it in a long time. How does Haji hold up?
The interesting thing about Haji is he is a stereotypical, but he's not stupid.
Right. He's not. I remember.
He has heroic qualities.
It's a pretty progressive take
yes.
on the character and the ethnicity
yeah.
for its time.
Yeah. He was like, a street kid. He ends up being adopted. He ends up being, you know, Johnny's adopted brother.
Right. They treat him like a brother. He's
yeah.
one of the family.
Yeah.
And
he's not a servant.
Right.
You know, so it's one of those. There are stereotypical, you know, and in some of the villains too.
You're, right.
But.
Oh, that's true. There's the Asian guy they're always fighting.
Dr. Zin.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty.
But it is. I mean, you have to understand. But it's not a just a absolute, like, we're embarrassed when you're
right.
watching it. It still holds up very, very well. And there's so much influence. And Brad Bird is on record as saying, like, oh, it's totally influenced by Johnny Quest. So if you're really into, like, how he's able to take an adult, you know, make an adult cartoon that kids see one way and
right.
adults see another way, Bugs Bunny's another thing.
Yeah.
Then definitely check out Johnny Quest.
Did you ever watch the ones where they brought him back?
Yes.
What? I'd like. So there was a girl, too.
The New Adventure. Jesse.
That's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The best thing about that was the intro, and then, you know, because that's the other thing is the music.
The music
is this jazzy music,
yeah.
adventure music. And that's the other thing that, like, Michael Giacchino.
I think
the guy who,
yeah.
the composer of this.
Yeah.
That's totally pulled from Johnny Quest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good.
I mean,
yeah,
we don't get enough bongo drums
yeah.
right now, but the
yeah, you know,
bongo drums are all over Johnny Quest in this movie.
Yeah, I think we'd be remiss not even to mention. I'm glad you said something. Like, the score is so good; it fits the
yeah.
Incredibles so well.
Yeah,
it really is. I love the tone of it, and it does fit that like 60s era vibe, mm-hmm. but in the action sequences,
yeah.
but a product of things like Johnny
mm-hmm.
Quest and those
mm-hmm.
action sequences, it just fits so well with the style and the tone of the movie.
Yeah,
yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dan.
Yeah.
So I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Dan. You can find me on Twitter, DanGraney67, GRANEY.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBracket and listen to Show Spoilers, where we spoil all the Westworld episodes at the moment.
And this is Tom. You can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. If you would like to continue the conversation online, find us at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. Or on Twitter at Real Spoilers. Also, we're available on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe. And if you would like even more content, check us out at patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. Next week, we will be tackling Jurassic World. Isn't that what they're calling it?
Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom?
There we go.
Yeah.
I can't. I was like, Jurassic World, Jurassic Park.
It's called Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Is
okay.
The
there we go.
Title.
Whatever.
I could keep track of the movies. I cannot keep track of their titling nomenclature
now. It's a little.
Like,
yeah, it gets more and more confusing the older I get. So, but we'll be talking about a dinosaur movie. How about that? So that's what you have to look forward to. So until then, thanks for tuning in. And Ron Wilson gets superpowers by falling into toxic waste.
Mr. Incredible, incredible, incredible. Catching the bad guys. Pow, pow, pow.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.